in an old wrecking yard. Finding memories in an
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. It has been a little bit of a day. It's Tuesday here in Houston, and running about 90 degrees in the shop. I got my little cold air blowing up my skirt over here. I went, and tomorrow's a big day. Me and my family are leaving on our road trip to Colorado. I got shows in Colorado, and really looking forward to this. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting on the road with my family and seeing some different stuff. I went and picked up the Volkswagen Atlas that I rented for our Colorado trip this AM. It is really, it's a joy to drive. I had to do a little tooling around Houston. Went, got my ears lowered, and run a couple errands, that sort of thing, last minute errands before we get on the road. Realized my igloo cooler was broken, so I had to replace that with another one because we like to take a lot of our own food with us because it saves money, especially with the kids. And I just haven't been eating a lot of fast food, and every time I do have any fast food anymore, it just ruins my stomach. So I prefer to take my good food that I've been eating that's been helping me lose weight with me on the road so that I can eat a little better. If you've traveled, you know how hard it is to eat good when you're traveling unless you really work at it. So, and I'm going to be working out a whole bunch of things, and I just want that to be an easy solution. But that thing's a joy to drive. I have enjoyed, my wife loved, we rented one something last year for something. I don't remember what the deal was, but we rented one. And I didn't drive it. I was out of town at the time, but my wife drove it around, and she just loved it. And I thought, boy, make Miss Rachel love anything the way she loves that little Cadillac of hers. It's really got to be some kind of special. Y'all know my love for Volkswagen, of course. So I wanted to test this thing out. The more I read about it, the more I liked, and the more I researched it, the more I liked about it. And, you know, like 279 horsepower out of a 2-liter, and the thing gets killer gas mileage. Perfect little cross-country trip machine like this. Enough room for me and the family, much more room than the SRX. And I still get to pretend like I'm having that VW trip I always wanted. It's powerful, comfortable. I think it'll serve my little family well for this momentous journey we're undertaking. I can remember the sense of awe that I was filled with as a young person the first time I experienced the Rocky Mountains. I mean, mouth open, hardly able to believe they were real and not just some image on the TV or page. It really does. Unless you just grew up with it, it takes your breath away. But I didn't. It was an amazing thing. It was a thing I'd read about in books and seen pictures of. And we're flatlanders here in Houston. This is a... We're just surrounded by miles and miles of almost perfectly level swamp. Right at sea level. Perfectly sea level swamp. I don't know. We might actually be below sea level. I don't know. But I know we're real close to it. Dang, damn, I got bit up on my arm. That hurts. And these kids' mind, they ain't never experienced nothing like this. And I'm looking forward to witnessing it and enjoying some beauty from my youth. I haven't been back to Colorado in many, many years. Well over 20 years. I have not been back to Colorado. And looking forward to enjoying the nostalgia of returning back to that beautiful place and checking it out and watching them experience it. So I'm psyched. So I'm recording this on Tuesday. You know, and by the time y'all are watching this, the shows will be done, and we'll be somewhere between Colorado Springs and Houston, Texas, making the trek home. It's been a little bit of a whirlwind of a day. I was working on this episode today, trying to finish it up for filming and writing, and also working on my book that, you know, that I have to kind of chip at that a little bit every day, and then some days I spend big days on it. And I had a video, a dumb idea that I've had for a very, very, very long time. It originally started out as a stand-up bit. It was an idea I had, and it was because after the freeze in Texas, electric bills got so out of hand, everything was so crazy here. I am such a cheap son of a gun that every time, like, we open a bill and we owe money, I get real dramatic. That I just had this idea. It was just this funny idea I had in my head for a long time. I was going to do this stand-up bit on stage about how Southerners get very Faulkner-esque and overly dramatic when they get their electric bill, because we don't have a lot of co-ops left down here and we're all getting screwed pretty good. And it's something I worked on for a long time, and then I put it aside, and then I decided that I wanted to make a short form video with it, and I worked on that for a while, and I put it out thinking honestly that most people wouldn't give two plugs about it. I thought it'd be just one more video I made that got 40 or 60,000 views, and the blast thing has gotten, I think altogether somewhere in the area of about 3 million views. And people just really responded to it, especially people down here really responded to it, which is great. Now, one of the things about being a social media creator is anytime you go viral after that, your algorithm just goes to hell, right? Like, you can't get anything to do any numbers. So it's kind of it's a catch-22. You, of course, want some virality every once in a while, but you can't keep up that pace. And I've learned, thankfully, because it's happened to me a few, I've had some videos hit 6 and 7 million views. And after you go through that a couple times, you kind of understand it, you realize what's happening. But it also is what comes with it is a flurry of imposter pages and imposter channel. Not so much. I don't have as much problem with it on YouTube and Instagram. Where I really have a problem with is Facebook and TikTok. It there's probably 20 guys calling themselves Jerry Wayne Longmire on TikTok right now, and another 20 on Facebook trying to scam people. And it's just frustrating because then your fans are messaging you and they don't realize they're on the wrong page and they think you're asking it. I'm like, I will never ask you for money. I'm not asking you for money. I may try to sell you some cameo videos. I may try to sell you some sponsorship, but you give me some money, I give you something in return. You know what I mean? Like, it's a tit for tat deal. I don't, not against charity. I just think, you know, it should be reserved for people with more hardships than myself. People did donate some money, first with the legal stuff with the cats and the dog. And I was very thankful. There's a couple of people that they just really, really wanted to, and they did, and we appreciate it. It was, but anyway, so all that comes with it. And then also comes a lot of attention. And a lot of attention from people who haven't been following along the story and don't know all the stuff y'all do. People that are just catching a snippet of the story and making snap judgments. And some people say a lot of ugly things. And I'm not going to lie to you. I am a human being. And I don't like to see people say ugly things about me. And it's okay. I know it's part of the gig. I'm not crying in my Cheerios about it. Just, it's a lot. It can be overwhelming. It's a good kind of overwhelming. It's a good kind of overwhelming, but sometimes it can indeed be overwhelming. During the process, while I was working on this, not only was that video that's been going viral for 2 days, and my book publisher is all excited about it, and everybody, you know, the people, our little team working on the book, they're very excited about it because it goes right hand in hand with the book and the writing I'm doing. And my book editor compares me to Mark Twain at least once a week. you know, says that I remind him of his writing style and stuff like that. And not what I'm doing here, where I'm just talking, you know. Even though I write things down and make myself notes here, what I'm doing here is just talking, y'all. But while I was working on this and writing stuff down and doing research on that generation of Dodge Ram, I started getting messages. I got a message from a friend of mine in Washington. And then I got a message from a friend of mine in London. And I was like, what is it? People I hadn't heard from in a couple months, you know. People I only talk to from, you know, just where I don't have a lot of free time, you know. So people I don't hear from very often. All of a sudden and then a friend from Ireland hit me up. And then a friend from California. And I was like, what is going on? So I went and stopped what I was doing right. And then I looked at the message. And I was getting all these messages says, Mike Rowe wants to have a drink with you. Mike Rowe wants to have a drink with you. Like, and I was like, what are you talking about? And nobody said, hey, go check your Facebook or anything like that. Everybody just said, holy crap, Mike Rowe wants to have a drink. And I was like, yeah, well, I love Mike Rowe. I differ with him on opinions, a great number of opinions, you know, but I think he's good for young people. I think he's a good inspirational voice and a good level-headed voice. And I've always enjoyed the things he wrote. Even when I don't agree, I just enjoy the way he formulates his ideas and the way he goes about it. So I was like, what's going on? So I get on Facebook, and sure enough, Mike Rowe has shared my viral video and said, this is a guy I could have or I could enjoy a cocktail with, or something along those lines. I don't remember it verbatim. But it has just been a flurry of attention today. And though I do all these things and I like the attention from my stand-up and I like what I do for a living and I love being on stage, I love all that, I'm a bit of an introvert when I'm working, when I'm home and I'm in my sanctuary here. I'm a bit of an introvert. I don't see my friends in Houston very often, rarely. I spend most of my days here on the property, doing stuff around the house, hanging out with the kids, working on my various projects, writing. So it can be overwhelming. It's a good thing. I'm not upset about it at all, for certain. I hope something comes of that. I would love to have the opportunity to go do some of these podcasts I enjoy watching. So, and I would certainly love the opportunity to sit down with that fella and just have a fun conversation with him, because I find him very entertaining and I find him very informative and I enjoy him. So, that being said, let's do a quick sponsor pitch and get rolling. If you got a business or a brand and you're looking to get it in front of real folks who actually listen, I want to help you do that. Wrecking Yard is one of the fastest growing shows out there. We average 8,000 to 10,000 downloads a week, 11%. Engagement, and we're syndicated on Cumulus Radio, all podcast platforms, and broadcast live in video on YouTube. The folks who tune in, they're loyal, they're sharp, and they love getting a glimpse of the real me. Stories from the southern piney woods, lessons from the junkyard, and kind of honest, hilarious self-reflection you don't hear much these days. It's not a lot of people trying to be genuine. Everybody's trying to be an influencer. When I talk about a product I believe in or a service I believe in, people tend to pay attention. I don't do it often. And right now, we've got a handful of sponsor spots open. Your name, your logo, even your hat or a shirt, front and center on a podcast that's already been signed for a book deal and the option for TV and film. If that sounds like you're kind of right, email jwlcomedy@gmail.com. That's jwlcomedy@gmail.com. Let's grow together. I believe firmly all ships rise. All right. Today I'm talking about a truck I didn't know much about at all. I had to read so much about this thing. I had to really understand it. It was from an era of Dodge I wasn't interested in. But after doing my research, I have found out why my dear friend Skip wanted one so bad. You ever see somebody walk into a room with nothing to prove, but everything to say? Not loud, not desperate. You're certain. Like a man who's been knocked down before and got up with a limp and a smile. Well, that was basically the 2009 Dodge Ram 1500. And today, we're going to talk about the truck that didn't just show up. It changed the game. In January of 2008, most of Detroit was looking like a dropped transmission. Cold, broken, in denial about how bad things had got. Banks were quaking. Car companies were sweating. And if you're a truck, you best show up with a reason to exist. And right about then, Dodge walked into the North American International Auto Show like a cousin out of jail. You know what I mean? Just loud, rebuilt, something to prove. Been working out. And that something was the 2009 Dodge Ram 1500. This was not just another, you know, one of these updates where like, oh, we put a new grill and cup holders in it for you. You know, this was a ground up redesign of their pickup series. It didn't look it looked like it finally showed up dressed for war again. You know, it still had that kind of signature Ford leaning stance, little, you know, that big rig snarl that sold them so many trucks. But they smoothed some of them lines out. That looked muscular, confident. Strong, but like the way a dog looks strong. They switched rear suspension, coil springs, got rid of the five link. Boy, I screwed that all up. What I get for trying to think and drink water at the same time. They ditched the traditional leaf spring setup and they went to a five link coil sprung rear axle. And most pickup truck purists just about went into anaphylactic shock. But the kicker is, it worked. Made a smoother truck ride. Some people might call it more car-like. But now you could haul your picky mom-in-law and a pallet of Quikrete without spilling your coffee. Not only that, speaking of hauling, they came up with the Ram Box, which is like, you know, every pickup truck got a bed, but Ram was like, what if the walls of the bed had lockable storage? It was genius. It's an idea that's been around for 60 years that we got away from for whatever reason. They built toolboxes into the bed rail like a contractor's fever dream. Suddenly you had a place to put ratchets, jumper cables, road flares. Maybe a six pack, a pair of snakeskin boots, whatever it is that you needed in your toolbox. And they added options, you know, all kind of crew cab. Yes. You get the 4.7 V8, you get the 5.7 Hemi. It moved when you asked, moved like a minute. Those Hemi power pickups, they get down. And they went kind of crazy on the inside. I mean, they went full comfort. They gave you a cockpit in a pickup truck, which I'm not always for. It's not what I like, but it's what the people wanted. It's what started selling more trucks. Me personally, I like a bench seat. I like my girl to be able to sit beside me if she wants to for a little bit. But it just... They gave you a really strong center console and Uconnect, which was like their new infotainment system, and it made Ford Sync look like a rotary phone in a tornado. More than all that, it had attitude. It showed up that it was like the Dodge comeback with some attitude. It was the kind of truck that looked like it didn't ask if it was welcome at the tailgate. You know? And people noticed. Motor Trend gave it truck of the year. His first full-size pickup, brake rank, so we can be tough and clever and also comfortable. Some people are against that. I'm of two minds on it. I've driven, you know, a few of these pickups. It's a good feeling. It's a nice, comfortable pickup to run around in all day. And I got to tell you, if I was a contractor all day again and I was having to live that life and basically live out of my pickup, I wouldn't mind having me a little cockpit situation. It started something, though, in the truck building industry. It started something. It also really started pushing the four-door movement, which is not my thing, you know. But I know everybody loves it. It's not my type of thing. And they held up pretty decent. As long as you couldn't treat it like a bulldozer with Bluetooth. Coil spring suspension turned out to be a good idea. It may have handled like a big sedan at times, but it didn't buck like a nervous mule every time you hit a speed bump in the daggum parking lot of the hardware store. Not everybody liked it. The old school type said, oh, it feels too soft. And fair enough, if you needed a dedicated work rig that lived under payload, there were better options. But if you needed both, if you wanted to, you know, go down and get you some Finch Post on Monday and then take your wife to the Cracker Barrel on Saturday, the Ram could flex both ways without making you feel like you compromised. Under the hood, I mean, that Hemi, it still barked. Still a Hemi. Delivered 390 horsepower, 410 foot-pound torque, 410 pound-feet of torque. No turbos, no tricks, just displacement doing what displacement's supposed to do. The 4.7 got better for 092. Now, I have known quite a few people had problems at them, but they got 310 horsepower out of it. Held gear pretty good. I mean, you know, still a pickup. Ain't going to get Prius gas mileage, but for a full-size V8 truck, it wasn't a rolling oil embargo either. You're looking at mid-teens in town, maybe 19 on the highway if you caught tailwind, laid off the cornbread. Inside the interior, surprise, folks. Especially the ones used to Dodge being the last one invited to the upholstery party. Suddenly you had all these, you know, leather didn't feel like it come off a dumpster recliner, touchscreen navigation, rear seat DVD players, heated and cooled seats. Look, as a fellow that worked as a contractor in Houston, Texas, the cooled seat is a revelation. Truck would be kind of like a cowboy Cadillac without being a Cadillac, which looking at that Cadillac my driveway right now, I sometimes wish it was a Cadillac. In the real world, durability is always the big question when there's a big change in a product lineup. And truth is, these trucks age pretty good. There's definitely known gremlins, exhaust manifold bolts like snap off. Rear differentials going bad on them. There's transmission problems. Everybody was having transmission problems at that time period. And the early Uconnect stuff, they had some struggles with that, you know. Sometimes it would just forget who it was from time to time. But overall, it earned respect. Folks that had one for 5 years didn't feel like they'd been taken advantage of for the most part. And that mattered. Because it wasn't just, it was a pivot point. It told the world that Dodge was done being the default third choice. And it set a tone for what became one of the boldest brand pivots in recent automotive history. When Chrysler split Ram off from Dodge in 2010, people were upset. You know, I make fun of it all the time. A lot of people thought it was just marketing fluff. Other people thought Dodge was throwing in the towel. What they really did was double down. They turned Ram into its own truck brand with its own vision, not just a truck line, a truck identity. And the 2009 was the beginning of that. Even though it was still technically a Dodge Ram, it was what went on to become the Ram pickup. The Ram box, super popular, evolved into a must-have feature. Folks who like the gear dry or their party secrets covered up. Yeah, they put out the Laramie Longhorn limited trims where you get something that looked like it had been made by a Texas bootmaker with a very large budget. The Ram Rebel, you know, a little sand kicker, fun machine. And eventually the Ram TRX, which is less of a truck, more of a performance art piece with a Hellcat engine. But none of that would have landed if 2009 hadn't laid the groundwork. Basically said, you can have your cake, you can haul it into bed, and you can tow a damn boat while you eat it. Change the conversation about pickup trucks. I'm not 100% sure I like the way the new conversation went, but it is something I'm always in awe of, a brand that really changes the scene. It's my favorite thing to read about in the history of automobiles. You know, it's guys like Harley Earl that really just changed the way people thought about automobiles. And that's what happened here. And it sparked the competition good. Yeah, Ford took notice. Chevy blinked. Toyota said, we're fine. And then quietly backed out of the room for a minute. Everyone had to step it up. And They really altered the shape of the pickup truck in the United States. Not just a better truck, but a reason to believe they didn't have to choose between tough and thoughtful. Thing could ride smooth, look sharp, tow straight, and still kind of look like it belonged in a Marlboro. Wasn't perfect. It's bold. Bold causes change. It was like Chrysler finally said, what if we stopped chasing Ford and started chasing better? And they did exactly that for about 5 or 6 years and then fell off again. But whatever, they made some change. Around the time period, all these changes were happening over at Chrysler. It was about the same time period that Rachel and I moved to Bridgemont, a little neighborhood over off 2920. Louetta. Always want to call it Louetta because I got a cousin named Louetta. Things were changing in our lives. Some of you have been around, you've heard me tell the stories from that time period. You know, my comedy career was faltering. We just gone through all that stuff with the comedy club. It was rough. We took some blows. We had to go kind of figure out what the next part of our life looked like. And at the time being, it didn't feel like comedy was the biggest part of it. I had just kind of, 2009 is when I actually technically started my business, but I was already getting the DBA set up. I was already doing stuff to make that happen. I was already kind of taking matters in my own hand. I've been doing construction. I've been working for remodelers. I've been doing a lot of different things, and I was ready to start doing more for myself. I was about the time me and Roy split ways. I worked for Old Big Country for a while, and Roy gave me my first contract, and I split ways and took the contract for myself with his blessing. He was a good man, good mentor. my business was growing, was taking off. I was still trying to run it out of a Honda Accord. I'd had a Ford Bronco project that I had traded and then got back and then sold. Or sold it and got back. I don't remember. I ended up selling it to a fella out in California. He bought it off eBay from me. But it had already changed hands a bunch of times. I kind of decided that I didn't have time to do it with everything that was going on. Of course, had the little Mazda 626. And Rachel found us. We were living in this little rent house over in Althea, and some of you know, we got hit by Hurricane Ike and had all kind of damage. And we found out after the hurricane, our landlord had canceled her home insurance before the hurricane hit for whatever reason. She was kind of a weird lady, or Roxanne or something else. She's one of those always had a scheme in her mind, and I guess part of that scheme involved canceling the insurance. And we had all kind of damaged roof, water leaks, all kinds of trees had fallen on the roof. Hurricane Ike come right up. We lived in a little neighborhood that was very close to 45, and Hurricane Ike come up to 45 and just did a number on all the little neighborhoods. And our neighborhood had all these old growth trees. It was a neighborhood built in the 40s, and we ended up with trees down everywhere. Mess. Got one on top of the Honda Accord. Got a small one on the Mazda. Didn't do no damage. Rachel's like, we got to get out of here. We got to find us a better place to live because she ain't ever going to get all this stuff fixed. And we were basically living in a tent, it felt like at this point, because of all the blue tarps on the roof. So she finds us this little place over this little neighborhood called Bridgemont, Bridgestone. We lived on a street called Bridgemont. And it's kind of a cool little house, man. It's not a huge lot like the lot was in Althea, but it's got a two-car garage. And our bedroom, the main bedroom, had these cool vertical kind of like side light type windows. Had some neat construction, but it was all brick. So, and there was big trees in the yard, so we weren't worried. We always have this kind of irrational fear, and it's because I've seen it happen one time that some drunk's going to come down the road, lose control of his car. And it seems like every house we ever had bedrooms on the front of the house, except our house in Willis. And it's just this, like, I've seen it happen, and people got hurt, you know? But that tree, that yard had two big old trees and very strategic spots. Right off the back porch had this beautiful magnolia tree. Now, I didn't always call it beautiful when I was picking up those giant cones things that it drops. But when it would flower, it was amazing, and it smelled incredible in our backyard when you'd walk out. You'd just walk off that little porch. And it had this like three-level porch and like a little partial carport somebody put up over part of the porch. It was a cool little place. We were happy to move into it. Our landlord was this dude named Tom Egan, and we had to go back and forth with him a little bit. His wife like thought she was like super realtor, and we had to go back and forth with her about appliances and stuff until we got it all hashed out. But Tom was a really cool guy. He was a DJ, and I think he ended up moving to Belize, but he was kind of tied in with a lot of the people that knew me from comedy and stuff. We kind of orbited some of the same circles, and he was just a neat guy. He was a good dude to rent from. And it was a quiet little neighborhood. We were right down the street from elementary school. It was a nice place. I think of that house often. I have some fond memories there. Couple of particular not so fond memories, but for the most part, when I think about that house, I smile. I think about that's the house we lived in when Junie was born. I think about Junie and a little snow hat on the swing on the back porch. We had a couple of cold years there. And a lot of times I think about that little house, I think about a fella named Skip. And y'all have heard me talk about Skip before. But I'd kind of like to paint a picture of Skip for you, maybe better than I have in the past. sometimes when I paint a picture here, I paint it the way I would in a stand-up set, which you don't get enough context, enough detail. Skip was about my height. Some people might call him overweight. I just thought he was kind of thick-waisted. Brownie short. He's kind of built like my Papa Clark. That might have been why I liked him right off the bat. Darkened skin of a man spent many hours working out underneath the sun. Had grayish curly hat. Always had him a... Had him pack cigarettes with him when he wasn't dipping. He would go back and forth putting cigarettes in the child, but always had him a Dr. Pepper in his hand. He didn't drink. This guy, I don't think I ever seen Skip drink. I always had him a cold Dr. Pepper, a little 20-ounce Dr. Pepper in his hand. Big old thick, wide hands. Kind of hands that have worked all their life. Just thick with callus, wide and broad. Hands that were built to move things, pull wrenches. Hands that were created by the genetics of working men probably back for 1,000 years. He was from West Virginia. Had a little bit of an accent. It's hard to play. I can't mimic it as much as I'd like to. But he had a little bit of an accent. His voice was, he spoke very slowly. And his voice drug a little bit, kind of like Conway Twitty when he would sing. There's a little bit of drag or vocal fry on the back of Skip's voice. And he didn't get in a hurry to tell you something. So something like that. I'm close there. Skip, I remember meeting Skip. We had just got moved in. We hadn't been moved in very long. And I was out there working on that Honda. I was having some issues with the Honda, and I was out there just trying to figure it out, beat my head against the wall, and try to straighten this old Honda out so I could get back and forth to work. And he just come walking. He was right in the house, right to the left of us. And he just come walking up. Right through the trees. Not on the sidewalk, just right across the grass. I didn't mind. I'm not a grass type of dude. Walked up, offered his hand. He said, "How you doing, neighbor? My name's Skip." I said, "Boy, Skip, good to meet you." Now, the first time I met Skip, I only ever noticed Skip ever wear two things. Skip almost always was wearing mechanic's clothes. And by mechanic's clothes, I mean like a button-up, a mechanic shirt, a button-up work shirt. Got a shop name here. His name here, pocket for his cigarettes, and ASC certified patch over here, and something other over here, and those old dark Dickey style work pants and work boots. And most time you seen Skip, that's what Skip was wearing. I seen Skip in flip flops one time. I almost fell off the back of my truck. It surprised me so bad. He come outside in shorts and flip flops. And he was going to a friend's house who had a swimming pool. And it surprised me. He had his daughter with him. Surprised the piss out of him. Any other time you seen Skip, Skip had his going to town clothes on. And Skip's going to town clothes is usually a nice pearl snap shirt, a pair of blue jeans, and good looking pair of boots. And he'd have his hair styled a little bit. Yeah. That was the two ways I got to see Skip. That's the two ways Skip came. First day he walked over, he had them mechanics clothes on. Told me his name. I told him a little bit about me and Rachel. You know, I do contracting work. I just started a fence company building fences. And it didn't last very long. I got out of the fence business real quick. Fence guys are competitive. Holy cow. I couldn't compete with their rates. We chit-chatted a little bit while I worked on that Honda, and he watched me work, and I can read a fella, and obviously had the uniform on. I figured He was some kind of mechanic or a shop mechanic or something along them lines, or a heavy end mechanic. And still had grease on him. I was messing with that little Honda. I don't remember what the issue was. I have a feeling it had something to do with the distributor. Could be wrong. I just don't remember. And Skip goes, give me a second. And Skip run off to his garage. And then he come back a few minutes later and he asked me what year that Honda was. I told him. He wandered back off to his garage. A few minutes later, he come back with a book in his hand. And it was a service manual like you get from a dealer, like they give the dealer tax. He said, let's try this, this, and this. And he had his voltmeter with him, too. And we checked a couple things. Sure enough, we found the problem right away. I said, man, can I buy you some cold beer? He said, I'll drink. He said, just bring me a Dr. Pepper next time you see me. We chit-chatted a little more, and he walked off. And I thought, what a cool neighbor to have. What jackpot did I just fall into? I found out that night that Skip played guitar. And he's like, would you like to hear some? I was like, sure, man. I'm always down to hear a guitar player. I forgot about that. So later on that night, I walked over to his house. And he had a room in his house. And he had his guitar set up. And a little amp, everything. I don't know what kind of guitar it was. I'm not familiar with a great deal of musical instruments. He was very proud of it, showed it to me in great detail, went on and on about how he'd come across it. And told me he had played in rock bands when he was younger, running around West Virginia. I thought, man, this guy gets cooler and cooler. And then I was like, when somebody whips out an electric guitar, you just immediately, you're like, oh, I'm about to hear something right now, because that's usually what happens. But then Skip just started playing rhythm along to a track that was playing off like a boombox. And I kept waiting for him to break in, and you know, some tasty licks or whatever. And Skip just played rhythm along with this old country song. Sang a little bit under his breath, mostly just played rhythm. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good. I said, do you ever play lead guitar? He goes, no, I'm just a rhythm player. I said, yeah. I said, man, probably hard to play, just be a rhythm player without having somebody to jam with. And he said, yeah, that would be nice. It seemed disheartening for me to just, like, if I could play any instrument, I'd probably sit alone in my room and play that instrument all the time. I'm always jealous of people that have that ability. But it just seemed a bit disheartening, like, this might not be the most fun version of guitar you could have learned. But he was cool. I liked him. I liked him right off the bat. We got along like the dude. He introduced me to his wife at night. His wife was a very, very large woman. And I don't say that to body shame her. I say that to paint a picture. She was a very obese woman. Very, very large one. And she was one of those people that came off like the first time I met her, she came off like she was pretending to be nice. I got a bad vibe from her right off the bat. I thought, well, you don't seem real to me. You seem like you're trying too hard to be nice to me right now. And I'm being pretty pleasant. I don't know why you'd have to try so hard. I got to know her a little better. I would visit with her every once in a while. And she was one of these people that she honestly believed she was smarter than everybody else in the room. She may have been, but the things that came out of her mouth did not lead me to believe her. And she was kind of rude. She was real rude to Skip. She was real mean. She said mean things to him. And I just don't like mean people. And I know some people got a different vibe and that's how they play and stuff, but it never felt playful, and Skip didn't take part in it. He didn't respond back and play along. I've seen couples that say mean things to each other, but love each other like sun loves space. That was a dumb metaphor. But I've seen that. I've seen couples that are very strong, that just rag on each other all the time. Very strong. Everybody's got different ways of love. But she just did not. She did not seem like she even liked him. And I thought he was a genuinely likable fella. Now, I wasn't married to him. Also, in those early days of meeting him, introduced me to his daughter. Now, Skip was about 57 years old, I believe, when I met him. And he had, I believe she was 8. She may have been 9 years old. And he introduced, I knew about what age he was. I mean, you could see it. He was a man who wore his years on his face. You know, he had worked hard his whole life. And you could tell. You know, you can just tell. This is a dude that had lived a working man's life, his entire life, and he'd worked damn hard. And he had this 9-year-old daughter who did look like him, but did not look like this other woman in any shape or form, in the face or anything. Later on, a few days later, she's a sweet kid, real sweet, outgoing, fun to be around, good kid. After I got to know Skip a little better, of course, it didn't take long, over the course of a week or so, Skip told me that his first wife had died when Michaela was, I think, about 4 or 5 years old. Maybe 3. She may have been younger than that. But they had had an accident when he was in his late 40s. And she had gotten knocked up. And they were an older couple. And it was, I'm like, bro, I cannot imagine. I'm 47. And the idea of having to raise a toddler right now would I don't have that in me. When we did it, it was hard enough. And I guarantee you, Rachel did the lion's share of the work. I cannot imagine doing it at this age. I'm exhausted. This dude was just doing it. And then lost his lady, who he was in love with. The way he spoke about Michaela's mom was delightful, man. He just had all these good memories of her. He just loved her. Only thing he was mad at her about was dying on him. That'd interrupt a fella's life right there. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big old what the hell just happened to me at 49 years old. I mean, I took care of that problem. I ain't gonna be, you know, unless one shows up I didn't know about, but that one would have to be in its 20s now. That's a different situation. Not that I want that to happen, but if that does happen, that's something I think I could take on the chin and figure out how to deal with. But, hey, baby, 49, my God. One of Skip's big wants. Skip had him a 2002 four-wheel drive gray Dodge 1500. He liked his old truck. He's proud of it. He was clearly a Mopar man. Hadn't been raised by one. I knew how to get along with a Mopar man. I sometimes wonder if I'm not just that, like, I don't want to admit I'm a little bit of a Mopar man. But Skip was a Mopar felon. Skip was a mechanic. He was a mechanic for a local shop that did a lot of business, and he was one of their top guys. And his boss treated him well. And inside his garage, which doesn't account for all the tools he had at work and his main setup at work, but inside his garage, he had just the most beautiful array of organized blue, I don't know what brand they were, toolboxes with roller ball bearing drawers and tools to do everything. He'd been a mechanic his entire life. Every time he'd had to buy a tool, he bought a quality tool, he kept it. These were the tools of his trade, literally. This is not a guy that was just building a Honda Civic for fun in his garage. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but this was a man who lived and died by his trade. He was damn good at it, well liked, had a good reputation. And we slowly become friends. And some days it was a little much because I am very much an introvert some days. Some days I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to focus on my own things. I want to get out in the driveway and cut wood, and I want to work on my own projects. And it was hard to get time out in the driveway to work on stuff because here would come Skip. And then me and Skip would end up talking for an hour, and I wouldn't get anything done. At some point, I had this big old giant cable spool I drug up from somewhere, being a buddy drug up. And we rolled it in my backyard, and I set up all my power tools on it so that I could work in the backyard every once in a while and not, you know, get something. I was in a really productive mode, you know. But there were still many days where we hung out in the driveway, talked. I wasn't a drinking man at that time. I'd have a drink here and there. But most time, I had me a Dr. Pepper in my hand too back in. We were like half of King of the Hill, you know, except it's just Bill Daughtry and the Boomhauer Show. And I'll let you figure out who's who, but I know who I think it is. I built a lot of stuff at that house. I was in a big project. I was going through like a heavy woodworking phase. And I built some custom bars for people. I was doing some stuff. I was getting after it. I was learning, teaching myself. I built a table for us. I just was going kind of crazy. My creativity and the space I'd created myself in the garage and in the backyard to work on things. Most of my garage was set up for mechanical things. I had a big old, who's that guy, Herman something? This big old desk that my buddy David Doy gave me that he got out of one of them Howard Hughes warehouse sales. It was like I don't think it was a postal desk, but it was this big old green steel desk with a big old heavy top. And it was just the best thing ever. You could hammer and beat on crap. You could Dremel stuff on it. You could just go to town on that desk. Tear apart car parts on that desk. Do whatever you want. Wipe it off with a rag when you're done. It's just a good old desk. I had a good spot there. Me and Rachel were in a good place. We were kind of, I wouldn't say reinventing ourselves, but finding out what it was like to not be attached to that comedy club anymore and finding out what the rest of our life looked like. We were talking babies. I was making a little more money. Not a lot, but things were looking up. And we were having fun. We were the house that went all out for Halloween and went all out for Christmas until the year I beat the shit out of all the Christmas ornaments. But before that, we're going crazy. I built a real pretty wooden gate, you know. We were figuring out who we were before kids. We were having fun. And I was still doing the occasional comedy road trip. We had a bigger social circle then, you know. And we had many a gathering at that house, out on that back porch, and birthdays and things of that nature. Rachel went and bought us a above ground swimming pool. Rachel hates the heat. And it was the only thing in that house, that air conditioner didn't cool that house too well in the summer. Rachel went out and bought one of these inflatable swimming pools, the one with the inflatable ring at the top, and you just fill it with water till it fills up. I forgot, Fast Tech or something crap like that. It has a little pump on it. You get them at Walmart. They weren't terribly expensive. She got a little ladder for it. She made her life's work to learn everything she could about pool chemicals and keep that pool sparkly and beautiful. She was very good at it. She was, of course, still working her graphic design job. It was a good time. We hang out in that pool. I'd get home from work. First thing I do is go out there, hop in that pool with her. She'd already be in it. The minute I'd text her, tell her I was headed home. It was about an hour drive home from Conroe at the time. I'd text her back in those days, about an hour and a half, because I was coming down 2978. The traffic was a nightmare. But But baby, I'm headed your way. Get there, hop out. Skip, come over, hang out on the back porch. I did get old Skip stoned one time. He kept asking me about pot and like what I felt about it. He knew I smoked. And he was like, blow a little bit of that my way. And so one day he came over and he was hanging out on the back porch with me. I think I was smoking some meat or doing something. And Skip said, let me get a little hit of that. Boy, next day he come up to me just like Forrest Gump. He got a little loopy real quick. And he went back off to his house. And next day I seen him after work. He said, Jerry, I must have drank me about 8 Dr. Peppers when I got home last night. That stuff is powerful. Skip, don't attack Cottonmouth with Dr. Pepper, bro. That's a dangerous journey. That journey ends in diabetes. I do water. I think he might have hit it twice, but it hit him hard, you know. We're buds, man. He's one of the best neighbors I ever had in my life, honestly. Him, John on the other side of me was a good ass neighbor. We didn't see each other all that often, but John grew these big old pretty tomatoes, bring us tomatoes from time to time, come over and chit-chat. And then I had a neighbor up in Willis named Daniel Butler. Daniel Butler is about as good a neighbor as I ever had to. But that gum old James, my neighbor now is a good old neighbor, man. He's really, they're some good-hearted people. Been fortunate. I've had some bad neighbors, I've had some good neighbors. But Skip felt more than a neighbor. Skip was my buddy. We'd literally just sit there, stand there in that driveway, leaning against whatever wreck I owned at the time, and drink cold Dr. Peppers together. Sorry, the timer went off screwy. He spent a ton of time yapping with me when I would build stuff in the garage. I finally learned how to work and time compressor sprays and air guns around conversation with him. So he didn't talk a lot, but he talked slow. You let him finish the sentence, tighten up. Start prepping the next setup while he goes into the next sentence. Saved my ass on that Mazda one time. I guarantee you he did. Rachel's car, that little Mazda 626, started acting up and did a little diagnosis on it. Talked to a couple people I knew and they're like, it sounded like the timing belt's about to let go on it. And you want to change that because that timing belt goes, it's going to do a bunch of damage to that engine. At this point in my young life, I had never tangled with an interference engine before. I'd never tangled with timing on an interference engine. I grew up push rod V8s and the like and push rod four bangers, six cylinders, all that sort of thing. I hadn't messed with no interference in. And I decided I'm going to change that timing belt right there in the driveway. Well, a lot of you know about cars. Those of you who don't, this thing had a transverse engine, which means they put the engine in there sideways. It's a common occurrence of front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive vehicles. And everything I needed to take off the front of that engine was right up against the inside of that fender. And I took the inner fender well out, and that gave me a little more room, and I took the wheel and tire out, but there was just some things that I did not have tools to get to. I started tearing that engine down, getting everything the best I could, and taking more stuff, the antifreeze bottle and crap off the car and everything, thinking that was going to help me get down. Get on this bolt or this one, you know, trying to get that timing cover off and get to the problem. I was knee deep in it and I was reading the Haynes book as I went. And I didn't really use a lot of YouTube then. I wasn't familiar with YouTube, but I was reading a Haynes book and calling my dad and asking my dad questions. I'd gone and bought the parts. I finally got that thing all apart under the most egregious of circumstances. I got that daggum thing all apart. Got that time. Sure enough, that time belt wore out. The guide wore out. I had already bought all that. So, boy, this I done got it apart. Now I got to do is put it back together. This ain't gonna be no thing at all. Skip pulls up his pickup. I'm over there trying to figure out how to line everything up. I can't figure out how to line everything up on this thing. Put this time belt. I don't know how to set the timing on this car. I'm looking at it like somebody just showed me Shakespeare for the first time. Just kind of got my head turned like a dog when it don't understand. Skip pulls up the driveway, looks over me, gets out of his truck. He'll get home, he'd go inside a little bit. But this day, he got out of his truck. He said, what you got over there? I said, oh, I'm doing a timing belt. Rachel's car, timing belt was bad, and the guide was bad. I'm doing a timing belt. He said, you ever done one of those? I said, no. I said, in fact, I spent most of the day just getting the damn thing apart. And he got a funny look on his face. He said, I'll be right over. And he walked off in the house, I guess, said hello to his wife and his daughter. Immediately come back out of that garage with a book. Here's a Mazda service manual. And he walked right up. He said, you ever worked on an interference engine before? That's an interference engine. If we don't get that lined up going back right, you're going to tear that engine all to hell. What does the interference engine mean, Skip? And then he explained it to me. So the interference engine is the engine that if you don't set the cams and all this stuff right, the pistons and valves can make contact, do a great deal of damage. That's why I say you change these time belts before they go out. Because a lot of times they fail while the engine's running. It does a great deal of damage to the engine. Damn, Skip, I ain't never messed with one of these. He said, that's all right. He also had a little black box with some tools in it. It was a time and alignment tool that we needed to set those cams up and get that thing put back together. And he showed me how to do it. He also showed me how to do it without the alignment tool. He was very patient. He taught me a little bit about interference engines and how to align the cams without a tool. But we went ahead and lined it all up with the tool. He probably saved me a broken motor in a car that I was just trying to get back together so we could sell before any more. It was just getting to that age where stuff was breaking down on it. It was kind of high mileage at that point. Getting that age where I was concerned for it. But he saved my ass in that motor. Because the route I was going was probably going to end up with some bent valves. As I was just sort of trying to wing it, as I did in those days. And we got that thing back together. When it come time to get those little tight bolts, boy, Skip disappeared off. Stayed out there with me till dark, fighting mosquitoes. And come back, you know, everything that we needed to get to a spot on the engine, he had a tool that could do it. He had a swivel socket or something. He had the tool. He's that guy. He had the thing that you needed. The thing you needed to do this every day for a living. He had it. He hung out. He'd come over, hang out on the back porch with me. Rachel got me a little electric smoker, and nobody had ever taught me how to smoke food, but I really wanted to learn. And she got me this little electric smoker from Gander Mountain as a gift. And he hung out with me while I would smoke ribs just for days on end, trying to learn how to smoke ribs. We'd always invite some people over to eat them. But it didn't matter. I will tell you, it didn't matter how bad I botched a set of ribs, how bad they was dried out, how they were too soft because I did the Texas crutch where I went too long. They got too soft. Bones was falling out of them. Didn't matter how bad I screwed up the ribs or too much smoke, whatever it was, and I wasn't happy with them ribs yet. But well, no matter how bad I boxed them set of ribs, old Skip just thought they was fantastic. That's a good buddy right there. It may have also been because he's from West Virginia. I don't know if they have good barbecue in West Virginia. I'm not super familiar with West Virginia. one of the places I ain't spent a lot of time. Seems like the type of people that would know how to barbecue, but I don't know what type of barbecue they do. But it didn't matter how bad I screwed them up. Skip, boy. They go good with Dr. Pepper, man. You know, he finally got him that 09 Dodge Ram. He talked my ear off. He talked my ear off about that pickup for about 2 weeks beforehand. He was excited. He's finally going to pull the trigger. Those trucks were hitting. He was waiting for that specific, that new design. He wanted that new design Dodge Ram. And it was funny for me to hear a mechanic excited about a new design vehicle, because generally they're not. Generally, that first year got a bunch of issues. But boy, he was excited about it. He was excited about it the way my father-in-law was excited about the GMT 800 when it came out. Turned out to be right. That was a pretty solid pickup, too. But he talked my ear about it about 2 weeks, boy. Oh, I'm about to go get that Dodge. I'm about to pull the trigger on that Dodge, Jerry. Jerry, I'm on. His voice had a little rasp. I wish I could duplicate it. I liked his voice. Jerry, I'm on. I'm going to go get me that Dodge. I decided I'm going to pull the trigger. She's mad at me about it. I can't remember his wife's name. Saved my life. She was just a kind of a mean spot. I just got to where I kind of quit talking. I just wave at her in the driveway. That was it. But I didn't need to have any more conversation with her. She's just rude. I didn't like the way she talked to that kid. I didn't like the way she talked to him. I just thought she was mean. And I never seen anybody eat like she did. Like, and I've been around people who are obese, and I've been obese a large part of my life, but I promise you, I don't sit around shoveling food in my gut. It's not who I am. I was obese because I lived a sedentary lifestyle and still ate like I was doing construction every day. Can't do that, turns out. This one, I seen her eat a whole family-sized bag of peanut M&Ms one time in one sitting. While we were just all hanging out on the back porch talking, this woman never offered an M&M to a single one of the other four people sitting around that time. She didn't offer nary a peanut M&M to anybody else sitting there. And she went through that whole bag. And then left them on the table when she walked out the empty bag. Which sort of, anyways, I just got to where I didn't want to talk to her. I was friendly, polite, civil, but I wasn't interested in having discourse. Well, she's mad as hell at him. He's going to go buy that truck. And he finally had it, stood up there, said, I worked my butt off. I'm going to go get this truck out of it. That was just the end of it. And I saw him. The day he pulled up in the driveway, I swear he looked a little taller when he got out of it. He was just gleaming with pride. He was so tickled to death about that new pickup. And I don't blame him. Anytime I get it, even if it's just new to me, you know, there's something about the first time you bring home another vehicle. You know what I mean? It's I get it. He was just gleaming, boy. Oh boy, just about to burst. He is so happy, and I don't think he had a lot going on in his house, in his home life inside the home that gave him much to smile about. He seemed mostly miserable. Until he got out there talking to me, and then he seemed like he's all right. And I seen him a couple times work. Well, everybody just loved him. He's a bit of a card around the water cooler. Not too long after he got that new pickup, her health problems start kicking into high gear. She fell out and fainted one day, and they called it diabetic shock or something along those lines. I'm no doctor. And, of course, they diagnosed her as a diabetic. I don't know what type or whatever, but she started coming outside less. I think she quit her job. And as she got feeling worse, I think she directed a lot of that towards Skip. That's what it seemed like from the outside looking. Because he spent more and more time outside talking to me as it all got worse. And it seemed like right after he bought that truck, she was just mad at him all the time. But she had this thing she'd do where she would just be sitting there talking and she'd nod off. And then she'd just be out for a little while. You'd kind of hear her snoring a little bit. Then she'd wake up a little while later. And when they would go somewhere together, he'd have to go out there and help her get in the passenger side of the truck. She had some physicality problems at that point. He'd have to go out there and help her get in her side of the truck. So often what happened is, I see this happen a couple of times, I had to ask him about it. He'd help her get in the truck. Well, she would do that thing. She would nod off and go to sleep, you know, if he had to take her to a doctor's appointment or whatever. And one time I saw her do this, and he just started the truck up, turned the AC on, helped her get in the truck. When she fell asleep, he went back off in the house to do some stuff. They come out a little while later. I know she was awake, looking around. He got in the truck with her. They went to her doctor's appointment, whatever the heck it was. I asked about the next day. I said, "But you just left her out there in the truck." He said, "Well," he says, "she started doing that just about every time I help her get in the truck, and they're trying to figure out what's wrong with her." And he said, "But if she wakes up and I'm already driving, she's real disoriented. She gets real angry and real mean and real rude to me. And I just rather let her wake up on her own time and then we'll go." He was just a nice guy. He was just a people pleaser, you know? So I'm on the way home from work one day, and Rachel texts me. She goes, "I think something bad happened next door. There's an ambulance out there," and Skip's standing out there talking to people in the ambulance, "and there's some cops out there." My Lord, it's still going to take me 30, 40 minutes to get home. I tried to ring Skip up. He didn't answer. About 5 minutes before I got to the house, Skip calls me back. He said, "She died." Very calm. "What?" I said, "Man, I'm almost home, man. I'll come over there and see you as soon as I get home. You need anything? Can I bring you anything? Any cold Dr. Pepper? Whatever I can do. You bring cold Dr. Pepper, I'll bring cold Dr. Pepper." Yeah, I get there and they've bagged her up and taken her. And Skip's furiously cleaning out the passenger side of that truck, wiping it down with armor all, that sort of thing. Kind of walked up by, "Hey, Bubba." And he turned around and he was a little teary eyed, but not like I would imagine. I said, "What happened, man?" He said, "Well, Gary, we was going to her doctor's appointment. And I come out here and I cranked up the truck, got the AC going. And I helped her get, she was having trouble walking. And I helped her get out here and I helped her get up in the truck. And she was breathing real heavy and she told me she just needed a minute." And he said, "Then she fell asleep. And so I figured it's going to be another 10, 15 minutes. And I didn't get a chance to eat my lunch at work today. She called me, said she wasn't feeling good and needed to go to the doctor. So I went in the house and made me a ham sandwich. Had me a cold Dr. Pepper and some chips." He said, "I finished up, threw my stuff away." He said, "I come out here to the truck. She was still asleep." He said, "So I went over and tapped her like that." He said, "Her body was cold. And I noticed her lips were kind of blue." And he said, "That's about the time I decided I might ought to call 911. He said, "And they said she had already been dead for a minute." He said, "Best I could figure is just the exertion of getting up in the truck was too much for her." He was so kind. I was like, "Brother, that's grim, you know? That's like..." we were quiet for a while. I started just kind of helping him with his truck, and I didn't know what else to do. Just talked to him. I said, "Is Michaela okay?" He said, "Yeah, she's over with a friend. She knows. She was here when it happened." I said, "Oh." I said, "Are you finally?" I skipped. I mean, you're not a real emotional guy, but are you okay, Bob? And he looked at me, and he had big tears in his eyes. He said, "I just feel horrible." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because I feel free." And I was like, "You are not crying for the reason I thought you were crying, bro." It was a lot for me to take in at that point. I hadn't known very many relationships. I hadn't been around. You know, it was... I said, "Dadgum," you know? And old Skip was a different fella after that, you know? We babysat Michaela after school. Rachel babysat Michaela after school for a while until he was able to, good while, a couple months, until he was able to line up some after school care. And she's a great kid. You know, we didn't really know what to do with the 8-year-old at that point because we mostly smoked pot and played video games. You can't do that with 8-year-olds. But she's a good kid, sweet, nice, very polite. She liked playing Wii U, so we'd play Wii U with her. And Skip was a different fella after that, man. He was a little sad for a bit, and you know, he had to deal with all the stuff, but boy, all of a sudden he's talking about his guitar again. Now he had a friend from work who's gonna come over and play with him, and then I would hear him in there jamming. That sounds They done got him a drummer, and you know, they were playing some. He had people to jam with, and dude's his age. He changed, man. Like, I watched this dude change. He walked a little taller. He smiled more. He was a better. He came over less because I think he was happier being at home. Junior was born not too long after, maybe about 7 or 8 months after that. 9 months. I can't remember if Rachel was pregnant when that woman died. But we didn't live at that house for a real long time after Junior was born. We moved off to Conroe. And I'm just not good at phone. I was worse then. I kept in touch with Skip for a while. We'd phone tag each other back and forth. But we were living in Conroe. I was working in Conroe. We didn't really leave Conroe. We got busy. We started drifting apart. And also, well, Skip had met a gal at some point. I think she worked at the Subway where he would go get it, where he liked to go get his lunch. She worked at the Subway sandwich shop, I believe. I think so. Either that or Denny's. And they had hit it off. And he had gotten to chatting her up, and they'd gone on some dates. And I think the last time I talked to him, they had moved in together, and her and Michaela had just hit it off like best friends. And he just sounded happy as shit. He'd have married this old redheaded gal that twinkled his eye from the Subway shop. And if I never hear from him again in life, it'll be all right, because I got to see Skip become a West Virginia butterfly and find a good side of life again. I guess we'll wrap that up. We got some testimonials to do, and also we got some unwrapping to do. We have some packages. I'm terribly sorry. This package, I've already, we got another package here that showed up. That's the other box I showed y'all from the till. We got another box of loose assorted cards, and I think they came from a fellow on Facebook. I couldn't find a note here. thoughts, but boy, just a whole mess of Matchbox cars. Donate to the charity. DrivenDreams.org. Driven Dreams is a, y'all have heard me talk about, it's a nonprofit that donates new diecast cars to kids going through tough times. It started out as Hot Wheels for Hope, and it has grown into a nationwide effort to spark joy through small but meaningful gifts. 2023 alone, they were trying to give away like 20,000 cars, and it just keeps growing. And through community events like Diecast Donuts, they collect toys, spread hope, one tiny car at a time. This was started by the founders of the Diecast Breakdown podcast. That's how I learned about it when I was a guest on their podcast. And I've told you a million times, maybe 10 times. I don't know. I like to exaggerate, but I've told you a lot that it just tickles me to death. I think it just, I think it's just the perfect little toy. And we're making new car people in the process. So let's see what we got here today. And I hope these have notes in them. Care of J.W. Longmire from Amazon Fulfillment Services. And what do we got here? There. Oh, Preston, you contacted me today. J.W., Hot Wheels brought me so much joy as a child. Thank you for helping pass that feeling on. You're a good man, Gunga Din. Present from Preston. Man, I do not know. Is it Hadji or Hoggy? I probably screwed that up. You're going to tell me how to say your name, Preston. Preston, maybe Hoggy. I don't know. 100%. I'm sure I will talk to Preston in an email. We will get that straightened up. Got us another 20-pack vehicles to add to our growing collection that we're going to donate to DrivenDreams.org. on their day of gifting in October. And it just, you guys have just showed up in force. Not only that, another listener of the podcast announced he's done toy drives and stuff in the past, and he's decided to get involved and do a little push. He says his people like to give. He's up in Pennsylvania. So I'm really excited to hear that. I love to hear about other people promoting this fantastic little charity that I've just fallen in love with the idea by. And he's working with a children's hospital up there. Wow, here's a 24-car random assortment party pack. Another 24 cars. And who is this from? Let me see if I can find it up here. Thanks for all you do, JW. Please keep up the great work. Oh, our buddy Gene Bond. Gene Bond's always in the comments. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, so Gene Preston. God bless you, man. This just tickles me to no end. This is fantastic. Y'all are beautiful, beautiful people. Thank you for contributing to this, and we're going to have a good time putting all those cars in the hands of some kids, and I just couldn't be happier about it. Oh, let's do the test one. So I gotta go to, I gotta pull them up on the computer here. Testimonials, if you will, Daddy. Let's see. Ooh, I cannot read that. Oh, there we go. Oh, that Gene Bond. There we go, buddy. Look at that, man. Must have been the at Gene Bond. Thanks again, JW. These are our comments from last week, our episode about the Volkswagen bus. Thanks again, JW. Always a good time. Honestly, I felt for you when your fort disappeared. We had a barn, chicken coop, and a few scrap cars in the barnyard of our home when we moved to the country when I was 12. Lots of great adventures and also some trouble, but it was another part of growing up. One of the most fun things was rooting around the old garbage dump back in the far corner of the second pasture. Always a surprise what folks threw away through the years. Gene, I think you and my papa would have got along just fine, Bubba. Thank you. And thank you again for the car donation. I can't read that. At Wizard 1289, I guess. When I was a little kid, a large portion of the year we traveled across the country working flea markets. My dad was the best wood sign maker in the country. We had a home base in Kentucky, but a large part of the time we lived out of a 23-foot mid-70s Pace Arrow or a Dodge camper van. It wasn't the life back then. It wasn't the van life back then. We were considered the trashiest of the trashy, almost a step below carnival folk. We froze our asses off more times than I want to remember at trade days in Tyler. Boy, you and me might have been at trade days at the same time, because boy, I sure spent a lot of time at Overton Trades Days for Papa Clark and the Tyler Trades Day. That was two good ones right there. Let's see. At James Nauman. It's hard to believe it's been a year since it started. I've watched almost every episode with the exception of a few when you change up the platform for that little bit of time. Yeah, a lot of folks struggle with that, including me. I've enjoyed this podcast mainly because it brings me back to my childhood and has helped me get through a few difficult times this past year. Hope this podcast continues to grow and that you have continued success with this in your book deal. Happy Father's Day, JW. I hope you had a good Father's Day. I had an excellent Father's Day. My kids and wife, we don't do big gifts on these kind of days, but my kids and wife and we've kind of been tight, you know, lately. But they bought it. I got thinking about the movie Six Pack a while back. I wrote a sketch about the song in it, and I was thinking about how much I love that movie. And start trying to find a place I could watch that movie. None of the streaming services offer it. And so what they got me for Father's Day was brand new DVD in the box of movie Six Pack, Kenny Rogers, which is one of my favorite movies from when I was the age I was living in the wrecking yard. I watched that movie a bunch. I wanted to be Brewster Baker, but also be young enough to date Diane Lane. Diane Lane come about. I was introduced to Diane Lane by that movie at a pivotal point in my young life that affected the way I viewed the opposite sex. She was quite the inspiration for a young man. And we watched that movie again. Rachel, of course, piled up on the bed with me, and we watched it. And I will tell you this, there's been a few movies over the years from my childhood that I went back and rewatched, and they didn't hold up. They just didn't hold up. They came off corny. They came off, 80s movies were kind of corny. But Six Pack held up. I watched it and enjoyed the piss out of it, and wanted to be Brewster Baker all over again. I just love Kenny Rogers. He's written some of my favorite music ever. I'm a big fan of Kenny, like all the way back to first edition Kenny. What Condition My Condition Is In is like one of my favorite jam songs. I love first edition Kenny Rogers. So yes, the excellent Father's Day. And I also spent about 2 hours playing Forza with my cousin Ricky, who's my gaming partner I like to game with. We had a good time, a good chit-chat. And gaming time's been a little tight lately. I've been working so busy, and he's getting quite a bit busier. All right. Well, that wraps up testimonials. And I worked on this little piece because I really wanted to see if what it was that I thought about all this after I sat down and put it together. And Skip, he taught me something I didn't want to learn. Mainly how pointless it is to stay miserable. I used to think misery had meaning. Like maybe if I sat in it long enough, something good might come out of it, you know? The struggle versus art thing. Like pain was the price of wisdom. And it often is. But I'm a firm believer still that adversity can cause you to grow. You may have heard the story. I heard there's a rabbi that tells a story about the lobster shedding its shell because it becomes uncomfortable. And only when we become uncomfortable do we grow. And it's basically, he's just parroting, we're all parroting somebody. He was parroting Marcus Aurelius, one of the Stoics, and they believed that adversity caused growth. Pressure makes diamonds. It's not rocket science. It's something that's been said to death in a billion different ways. But I also believe there's a kind of adversity that doesn't build anything. It just takes. It wears you down, hollows you out, and it convinces you at some point that survival is all you're good for. There's a level of misery that doesn't make you stronger. It makes you smaller, quieter, meaner, tired in a way that sleep can't fix. And around that time, when I was going through some difficulties of my own, my father-in-law, who was a good man, very plain spoken, gave me some of the best advice I ever heard, even though I was mad at him about it for a while. And he told me, he said that he had had his own share of family problems and this and that, been through a divorce. And he said, if someone is so toxic that they make you feel miserable or less than all the time, you've got to cut them out just like cancer. Even if it's blood, even if it's long history, even if it hurts. Because if you don't, you just let that poison stay. And it spreads. It don't stay in one place. It creeps into your work, your relationships, your health, your joy, until the only thing you know how to feel is survival. And watching Skip go through his, crawl out of his own pain, watching him turn into someone lighter, freer, clearer, proved to me that healing is possible. But you can't start healing until you stop handing your peace to people who don't deserve it. So I'll say this. There's somebody in your life that brings you nothing but pain. They belittle you, drain you, make you feel less than. I hope that you're able to find the strength to cut that cord. I hope you pick your own sanity over their chaos. I hope you realize you're not just here to survive. You're here to live. I'm rooting for you. I'm JW. I love you. Boy, I might have to get me in the garage, stack cars in it. Everybody made a joke, it's the most cars ever been in this garage. I think Dave's right.